You're listening to Radio DePaul. I'm Connor Mudd, and this is Tom Talks.
Hello and welcome to Tom Talks, the talk show where we totally talk Tom Cruise. Today is our Lions for Lambs episode, and with me is a very special guest. She never left her ancient Egypt phase. She takes really hot showers, and she measures her life on the Olympics. Please welcome to my show, Amy Doe. Amy, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm realizing now that this is the first time that we have properly had a conversation with each other.
True. We've talked through like Instagram, and we've met in passing probably, I don't know, 10 times or so. But yeah, it'll be good to sit down and, you know, actually talk.
About Tom Cruise.
Yeah, we talk a little bit about Tom Cruise on this show. That's less, the show is about Tom, but not really, you know?
Tom is a vessel.
True. Tom is the conduit for which I get to talk about other stuff with people.
And well, as all good actors should be, a
right.
vessel.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like, because, you know, I've seen you perform your comedy music. I've read like articles you've written or listened to you on the radio, but I don't, it's weird that we haven't talked, but basically this show is very much so, just a fun little interview followed by a game. And we talk a little bit about Tom. That's the basis of the show. I kind of structure the interview around the fun facts that you gave, and I'll use those to introduce you. And then, we talk through, that kind of stuff. So we get to talk about ancient Egypt is the fun part. What compels you so much about Egyptology?
I don't know, man. It was just one of those things, like when you're a kid, you go through phases, right? Like my little brother, I have a little brother, not so little anymore. He's like 18. It's kind of freaky. But yeah, he was like super into Thomas the Tank Engine. That was like his thing when he was a kid. But I loved ancient Egypt. Like there was something about the mummies that was like gross but like weird and spiritual that I found really fascinating. And then like it was wrapped up in geography and history, and you know, I don't know, it was just everything that it was just kind of so fascinating, and it still is. A couple of years ago I went to the National Gallery in Washington DC with my family. And they have a whole, like, everything in there is stolen. But, like, sure. They have this whole Book of the Dead that's, like, takes up, like, basically a gym. Like, one wall of a gym. It's just one long scroll. And when I walked into that room, it was, like, a really full circle moment for me. And the little Amy inside was like, oh, my God! Yeah.
Oh, that's
I don't know
phenomenal.
If that answered your question.
No, that really does. Do you have a favorite pharaoh? I always with Egyptologists or any sort of history. So is there one pharaoh in particular that sticks out to you?
So my roommates and I, for Valentine's Day, because I live in an apartment full of single people, we were like, we must do something to demarcate this, the holiest of days. And we did a PowerPoint night, and I did my PowerPoint on Akhenaten, the pharaoh,
sure.
Who ruled for 17 years in around 1300 BC, and he's been the subject of a Philip Glass opera of the same name. And I did my presentation for about 10 minutes, all about the history of this guy, why the opera is so weird. And I had a great time.
I've actually seen clips of that opera. That's the one where they juggle, right?
Yes!
They introduce the professional jugglers. It's so weird.
It's so weird. I'm so glad you know about this.
Yeah. Oh, because I forget. There's a little micro documentary on YouTube that I watched about it, like about how they put it on and all the baby heads on the dress of the lead actor. It's so weird.
It's so weird. It's so weird. It's so weird.
Yeah, that's definitely a great pharaoh and great stories along with it too. That's, you know, picking pharaohs, that is an A plus, that's an S tier pick of pharaohs for sure.
Yeah. Oh. I mean, like, he was the simp husband to Nefertiti, like the father of King Tut, you know, arguably one of the first people to ever only worship one god, screwed over the entire economy of Egypt for a while.
I'm recording it. I can censor. I can add bleeps in. Yes. So you're allowed to swear on this show.
I'm just trying to reduce the amount of work that you have to do after this, because as somebody who did audio editing as their job for 2 years, I know how it is.
But have you ever been to Egypt? Have you ever got to see like the pyramids in person?
No, I would love to go one day.
You also mentioned that you measure your life in Olympics. So how many Olympics old would you be now?
Seven. No.
Like, do you count Winter Olympics?
No, I don't. I only count the summer ones. So like every 4 years. Yeah, every 4 years. I don't know. It's just a perfect amount of time. And like the Olympics are so opulent, you know, that like I remember where I was when I watched the Beijing Olympic ceremony, just because like I had never seen it before. I was nine. It was really huge for me. So it really kind of, you know, messed up my whole, like the whole chronology of my life when the Tokyo Olympics were postponed last year, because I'm like, okay, so what am I supposed to do now? But I mean, you know, 2020, I feel like in some sense, and 2021, at least so far, I feel like we as a generation and as a society have been feeling like that time has been lost anyway. So I feel like it's kind of a weird metaphor. It fits.
Yeah, that makes total sense. What do you generally do to celebrate the Olympics?
Watch them.
Well, but do you watch with family? Do you have a feast? I know I always, no matter what the host country is, I always order Chinese food and I sit in my basement and I'll like turn off all the lights and watch the Olympics. Like that's the way to go. Fencing all day. But
dressage,
nonstop watch dressage,
fancy horses.
What is your favorite event of the Olympics? Is it the dressage?
I do always be going back and watching the dressage for no reason. Just because like, they do so much work to get the horses there. So I might as well, you know, I don't know. I don't want to be ungrateful. So I look upon the horses. But I swam for all 4 years of high school. So I like watching swimming. But I'm also half Japanese. So I like watching the events where the Japanese team has a fighting chance. Like gymnastics and even though this is part of the Winter Olympics, figure skating. I love figure skating.
Because I don't watch much of the Winter Olympics either. Figure skating is one that I'll watch. And then bobsled. I love bobsled. That's one. They go so fast. I just like to watch them go fast. Are you excited that, I mean, I suppose now this year's Olympics will be in Japan. Are you excited to see what the Japanese ceremony would look like?
Yeah, I am. Right now I'm embroiled in, you know, just kind of the pettiness that is the pure misogyny of the Olympic Committee at the moment. They are refusing to let a woman head it after the 80-plus-year-old man resigned because he got yelled at for making misogynistic comments. So it's like, even if the figurehead that is spouting the BS is gone, you're still refusing to take any kind of meaningful action to atone for those comments. But yeah, I'm excited. I just hope that, you know, it'll be able to happen in a way that's safe, where I like feel safe being excited to watch it, you know?
Yeah, that's definitely, it is a tricky space for sure to, because you want to make sure that, because it's the Olympics, it's the event that brings everyone together. You want it to actually bring everyone together in a way, yeah. not be well, like the rest of the world. You have hope for something like that.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. What you're a grad student now, right? If I'm not mistaken. How are your graduate studies going?
They're going okay. I'm in the preliminary stages of planning my thesis. I graduate after this next quarter. So yeah, it's just kind of trucking along. I'm going to have my master's by the time I'm 22. I know, skirt. And yeah, I don't know. It doesn't really feel real yet. And I feel like right now I'm more resigned to the sheer amount of work that I'm going to be doing for the next couple months. And I hope I'm deciding that the catharsis at the end is going to be worth it.
That is a valid thought. What is your thesis going to be on, or what are you thinking for your thesis?
Yeah, it's going to be about the intersection between side hustle culture and new media. And it's going to be interview-based, centering around people who have started Instagram businesses in the COVID-19 pandemic.
Ooh, that'll be cool.
Yeah. And there's going to be the requisite super long awardee academic paper. But there's also, I think I'm going to present it in the form of a zine.
Ooh, I love zines. Zines are just such a fun way to put information into the world.
Mm-hmm.
What sort of side hustles are you? Heck, if you're looking for subjects, you can promote it on this show.
Yes, I'm very much in the preliminary stages. But if you are someone who has started a side hustle in the COVID-19 pandemic and sell stuff on Instagram, resell stuff on Instagram, I don't know, sell commissions of your, like, have people commission you for things on Instagram, hit me up. Also, just generally, follow me on Instagram, because I think it's the social media that I use the most and am the most proud of. You can follow me at Hello Amy Doe. Yes, it rhymes. Doe is spelled D-O. Yeah, the end.
Amazing. Yeah, hopefully you'll be able to get the great interview subjects you need. I'm sure, because everyone's got a side hustle in the pandemic. Have you started a side hustle?
No.
Because of the pandemic? No.
I've decidedly won hustle.
Well, this is Tom Talks. We should probably talk a little bit of Tom. I've got four questions I ask every guest about Tom Cruise, or about their, you know, how they feel about Tom Cruise. Nothing too in-depth. How familiar would you say you are with Tom Cruise's filmography?
I've watched Mission Impossible.
Just the one? Just the
one? I think movie, I might or? Have actually watched up to 3 Mission Impossibles.
Okay. That's not the least amount of Tom Cruise we've had on the show.
For sure.
So you're not super high, not super low. Would you say, mm-hmm. Of the one Tom Cruise movie or 3 Tom Cruise movies you've seen, which would you say is your favorite?
Which is the Mission Impossible with the Burj Khalifa in it?
That would be Ghost Protocol.
Yeah, that one. I remember that one the most because I remember going, hey, that's the Burj Khalifa.
That for sure. The rest of that movie, I always forget. I don't even know, because he was like actually on the side of the Burj Khalifa,
yeah,
there. And that was ridiculous. And nobody talks about how in that movie, he also learned how to hold his breath for 7 minutes. Same movie.
Yeah.
It's just wild to me. But that's a good pick. I would call that one of the top Mission Impossible movies at the very, it's better than the second one and better than the sixth one. I always mix them all up though. So I don't actually know the numbers.
I'm glad that my taste has a seal of approval from the resident expert.
The next two questions I do ask all of my guests, what is the most Tom Cruise thing that you have ever done?
Specify what you mean more by Tom Cruise.
Well, Tom Cruise always has a certain enthusiasm about him. He does his own stunts. He's really into cults. He's kind of obsessed with his height. These are all things that people have mentioned as Tom Cruise-y things that they have done in the past. Lots of people will say they've ridden in a boat or made out with someone on a train. Different Tom Cruise-y things.
One time I was quested to get a brick from the bottom of a 10-foot pool. I didn't succeed, but I tried.
That's, you know, that's fairly Tom Cruise-y. What, who told you to get a brick from the bottom of a pool?
So, as I said before, I was in swim team for all 4 years of high school, and you do these drills. And sometimes Coach Teresa liked to post up and try to make these games kind of fun. But her idea of fun is what I can only describe as wet, like cold sadomasochism. And one of the games was, so I was on the girls' swim team. She would make us all go down to the deep end of the pool and tread water. But like we would all be spaced out so that we would kind of be like make a line across the pool. Mm-hmm. And then she would hand the person, she would be standing on the deck, and then she would hand the first person a brick. And then we would have to pass the brick from person to person until it theoretically would get to the other end of the pool. And sure. That was the drill. But what sucks is if you're holding the brick, then you can't use your arms to tread water. So it gets harder. Mm-hmm. And then obviously a brick is like 15 pounds or like whatever. So it sucks. It's just so hard. And if you drop the brick, then we're at the deep end. So it just goes like down to the bottom of the pool. Oh. And then the person who has to go and get it, first of all, has to get down there and then lift this thing and then swim it back up. So that game got retired very quickly. But that's the story of that.
That is very Tom Cruise-y. That's something he probably does that to train just like on a regular day.
Yeah, could never be me.
The next question that I ask all of my guests, it's less of a question. It's more of an opportunity.
Okay.
So I give every guest exactly 1 minute to say anything that they ever have wanted to say to Tom Cruise. So anything at all, if you want to criticize him, compliment him, ask him questions, if you don't care about Tom and want to use the minute to tell him about something fun, anything can happen. What I'm going to do after the show is all done is supercut all of the minute messages to Tom Cruise together and have one like 45 minute long message to Tom Cruise, that hopefully I can find a way to get it to Tom. But we'll see how that will work. But yeah, I can give you a couple seconds to think about.
No, go.
Oh, you're ready? All right. Your time starts now.
Hi, Mr. Cruise. Amy from the New York Times. What I have to say to you is several things. The first of which is, hello, nice to meet you. If you are ever in Chicago, I highly recommend going to 5411 Empanadas. Their lamb empanada is fantastic. I do recommend. My second point is I have a lot of questions about the way that fame changes people's lives. And I think that you have a pretty unique perspective as somebody who's had a lot of integrity in their filmmaking and a lot of kind of like messed up stuff just generally in your private life. So I was wondering how you would speak to your experience with the performance of identity versus the performance of acting. I would just appreciate if you could say a couple of words about what that means to you.
That was phenomenal. I love the 5411 shout out. I get their Malbec beef. But yeah, that's the Tom Cruise-y bit. Which means that we need to go into a commercial break, so please stay tuned after this.
This is Tom Skerritt for the Borgen Project. Each year, nearly 2 million children die from preventable diseases. Each day, 30,000 people die from hunger. 500 each hour are children. The Borgen Project is turning this around. We need your help. To learn more, go to BorgenProject.org. That's B-O-R-G-E-N Project.org.
Biking in Chicago is more than just a mode of transportation. It's a lifestyle. It's convenient, affordable, and with 13,000 bike racks, parking is never a problem. But with every reward comes a sidecar of risk. In Chicago, over 1,700 cyclists a year are killed or injured in bike accidents involving motor vehicles. Bike safety is simple. First, become familiar with Chicago bike laws. Know your hand signals and when to use them. Love your brain. Get a bike helmet that fits your noggin and deck it out with a headlamp and some reflective gear for riding at night. Bike at least 3 to 4 feet away from parked cars to avoid being struck by a car door being open. Motorists can do their part, too, by checking their side view mirrors for bike traffic before exiting their vehicle. Most importantly, remember that we're sharing the road. Looking out for both ourselves and each other is the only way to keep Chicago's roads safe, no matter what your wheels look like. For more information on bike safety in Chicago, visit www.chicagobikes.org. This public service announcement was brought to you by Radio DePaul, Chicago's College Connection.
You're listening to Radio DePaul. I'm Connor Mudd, and this is Tom Talks. And I'm here with Amy Doe, and we are going to play a game for today's Lions for Lambs episode, and the game is called Lions or Lambs. So different than Lions for Lambs, this is Lions or Lambs.
Okay.
I'm going to give you a fun fact, and you're going to tell me whether this is a fun fact about lions, about lambs, or about both. Because there's okay. Some fun facts that are applicable for both of them.
Fascinating. I used to work at a zoo. I love animal facts.
Amazing. Some of them are animal facts. I'll say that. Some of them, who knows?
Okay.
Yeah. Alrighty. Your first fun fact between lions or lambs, which one can weigh as much as 30 stone? I got this from a British website. That still weighs things in stone. Yes, lion is correct. Lions can weigh as much as 30 stone, which is, I think, 190 kilograms. I don't know the conversion rate on that.
Cool.
Right? It's a fun little fact. Lions or lambs, which one learns to walk minutes after they're born?
Lambs, because they're a prey species, so theoretically would have to run really quickly.
Yeah, they have the little wobbly legs. Very fun to watch videos of.
Imagine if that was people. Imagine if like babies like straight out the womb and like 5 seconds later they're like upright, ready.
Like, hello, I am here.
What am I running from?
Tell me, mother, is there a predator? Got a blast. Yeah. I actually don't know how quickly lions learn to walk. I should have looked that up. They could very well also walk within minutes after they're born, but I doubt it. They feel like they're more of a leisurely.
They would take their time.
Right. Yeah. I'll learn to walk when I need it. all right. Lions or lambs, which one can eat up to 40 kilograms of meat?
Lions?
Yep. Some of these are a little easier than others.
Yeah.
But, you know, we do what we must. Lions or lambs, which can jump over 40 feet in distance, not height? I feel the need to clarify there.
Lions? I feel like I see a lot of pictures of lions jumping at things.
Lions, yes, lions can jump over 36 feet. So the answer is both, because lambs can jump over 20 feet, but they can't hit 36. Lions can jump over 36, so of course they can jump 20.
Wow, everybody be jumping.
Right? It just horizontally, though. All right, which, lions or lambs, which is the head of the mythical creature Chimera?
A lion.
Yeah, it's got a goat on its back, not a sheep, or lamb or ram. I got really wrapped up in etymology here as to what's lamb and what's mutton and what's sheep and what's ram and what is ewe. I got very confused.
A ewe is a female sheep. A ram is a male sheep. A lamb is a baby sheep. And mutton is what you call lamb meat.
Well, isn't mutton what you call lamb meat when it's sheep meat? I got very confused.
Yeah, Yeah.
And lions are lions just all the time.
Mm-hmm. It's like Adele or Beyonce or Cher.
Lions or lambs, which was one of the first animals to be domesticated?
Lambs?
Yep. Now we're getting into the tricky ones. Not really. Lions or lambs, which is the topic of a movie nominated for the Best Animated Feature Academy Award?
Lion King. Lions.
Lion King.
Or Silence of the Lambs. Both.
Silence of the Lambs for Best Animated Feature?
Oh, never mind. I got excited.
But Lion King came out before they started awarding Best Animated Features. That award was not...
Did it win an Oscar?
It won Best Soundtrack.
Ah.
So the answer is Lambs because of Shaun the Sheep.
No way.
Shaun the Sheep was nominated for Best Animated Feature. It didn't win because only one claymation film has ever won Best Animated Film because the Academy hates claymation.
Was it Chicken Run?
I wish. I love Chicken Run. My sister and I are writing a Chicken Run musical. We're
amazing.
We're in the early, early development stages on that one. But no, it's Wallace and Gromit, Curse of the Were-Rabbit is the only...
Oh my God, absolute iconic, never been done before, never the same. Who's that lady? Who gave her permission to look that good?
But like our question as a family and as a movie watching group was always like, why didn't any of the Laika productions ever win Best Animated, like the Laika stop motion, or even Wes Anderson's Fantastic Mr. Fox or Isle of Dogs? Those I felt were, you know, kind of robbed a little bit of the animated films. And of course, Monster House should have won. That's a given.
Oh my God, Monster House. The emotional arc of that movie took me out. It took me out.
Excellent. And, you know, phenomenal stop motion. Gotta love it. But yeah, Shaun the Sheep was nominated for Best Animated Feature. Lions or Lambs, which is a mascot in the National Football League?
Both?
Both is correct because of the Detroit Lions and the Los Angeles Rams. They don't call them the Lambs, but Lamb turns into Ram later in life. All right. Lions or Lambs, which is typically featured in a Christmas nativity scene?
Lambs. God, I wish it was Lions.
That would be so cool, right? That would
be so badass.
I'd be religious. I'd take it up. If there was just cooler animals in the nativity scene, heck yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we have one final question here. Lions or Lambs, who has been played by Liam Neeson in a movie based on a book series? Is it a lion or a lamb?
An Aslan in Narnia? So lion.
That is correct. Liam Neeson plays Aslan in Narnia. And he has never played a lamb, nor do I think he ever will.
He should.
You know, maybe in another Shaun the Sheep movie, we get Liam Neeson in there. Honestly, he'd be perfect for a Shaun the Sheep movie.
Yeah, it's like the grandpa.
Yeah, I'd dig it. I'd watch the heck out of that movie. That, anyways, that was Lions or Lambs.
Yay! That was so much fun.
Right, it's one of my fun either or games. Eventually, I'll get better at coming up with new games, but I liked this one. Yeah, and Lions for Lambs, the movie, has nothing to do with lions or lambs. It's all about terrorism. And that's not fun. So it's good to lighten the mood before the second half of the show, which I record on my own time, where I get to talk about terrorism for I don't know how many minutes. We'll figure it out. But that's the game. Thank you for coming on, playing the game. Thank you for agreeing to be on my Lions for Lambs episode. We gotta like actually meet in person sometime.
Why the hell not?
And we'll be right back after these songs about lions and lambs. Hello and welcome back. You're listening to Radio DePaul. I'm Connor Mudd, and this is Tom Talks. You just heard two songs. You heard The Lion Sleeps Tonight, Weem Away by The Tokens, and Lamb's Wool by Foster the People. The reason I had two songs today is because we're talking about lions for lambs. So I had a lion song and a lamb song. Of course, neither of those songs are featured in the movie or have anything to do with the movie Lions for Lambs. We're going to go to a synopsis of the movie, followed by some fast facts, fun facts, and a data breakdown of this movie that, I'm not going to lie, I didn't like. I didn't think it was very good. And I'm prefacing the whole, all of this with that fact, is that I didn't like it. It's so serious, not fun as a movie. So we'll make it work, though. So this movie follows a couple different storylines. It's one of those multi-storyline type movies, the way that Magnolia was, but much less complicated than Magnolia. It's really following three stories, and stories is a strong word for some of them. Two of them are just conversations, and one of them is a story. So it kind of starts, chronologically speaking, with two students at a West Coast university, Arian and Ernest, who, at the urging of their idealistic professor, Dr. Malley, attempt to do something important with their lives. They make the bold decision to commission in the army to fight in Afghanistan after graduating from college. Dr. Malley is telling their story to another student. So he's trying to reach this talented, privileged, disaffected student by the name of Todd Hayes, who is not at all like Arian and Ernest. He's naturally bright, comes from a privileged background, but has apparently slipped into apathy upon being disillusioned at the present state of affairs. Now he devotes most of his time to extracurricular activities, like his role as the president of his fraternity. Malley tests him by offering a choice between a respectable grade of B in the class with no additional work required, or a final opportunity to re-engage with the material of the class and to do something. Before Todd makes his choice, he must listen to Dr. Malley's story of the former students, Arian and Ernest, and why they are in Afghanistan. Meanwhile, in Washington, D.C., a charismatic Republican presidential hopeful, Senator Jasper Irving, has invited liberal TV journalist Jeanine Roth to his office to announce a new war strategy in Afghanistan, the use of small units to seize strategic positions in the mountains before the Taliban can occupy them. The senator hopes that Roth's positive coverage will convince the public that the plan is sound. Roth has her doubts and fears she is being asked to become an instrument of government propaganda. She informs her commercially minded boss of her plans to call out the senator's new strategy for what she feels is a ploy, but she is shot down. Ultimately, Irving's version of the story is run without critical interaction. Whether Roth gave in and towed the company line or quit her job is unclear. But that's that whole storyline right there, which is why I say it's hardly a story. It's a conversation between the two people, the senator and the journalist. You hear their conversation. Simultaneously, in Afghanistan, a helicopter carrying Arian and Ernest is hit by Taliban insurgents. Ernest falls out, and Arian jumps after him. Ernest's leg is badly wounded, and he suffers a compound fracture, rendering him immobile as the Taliban arrive. After a drawn-out gunfight, the U.S. soldiers run out of ammunition. Rather than getting captured, Arian helps Ernest stand up, facing the enemies and turning their weapons against them, an action which prompts the Taliban to kill them. The unit commanders attempt to rescue the downed soldiers, sending A-10 Warthogs, but the weather, time, and distance interfere. Hayes, the student from earlier, is watching television with a friend. A reporter is discussing a singer's private life, while below runs a strip announcing Senator Irving's new military plan for Afghanistan. Hayes suddenly falls quiet, contemplating the choices with which his professor had left him. That's the movie. That's it. It's really boring. It's just not an interesting movie. Like, what happens here? What happens here is two students get sick and tired of college and want to go to war, and they go to war and they die. That's that plot line. The other plot line is this one dude doesn't like going to class. And his professor thinks he should do something with his life. And that's kind of it. They talk about it for a little bit. He tells a story. So the other story is just also very unclear. The journalist and the senator are just at odds the whole time. And it's just very, I don't know. It's not particularly clear how it ends, like what the consequences of any of this are. There's no clear arc. There's no character growth. You just see people kind of going about their business, and then some soldiers die, and that's the movie. And I wish it was so much better. It had the potential to be so good because of all of the factors that go into it. Let's go into the fast facts. Okay, the fast facts are all relatively impressive, right? Directed by Robert Redford, who also directed Quiz Show, Horse Whisperer, and The Legend of Bagger Vance. The writer is Matthew Michael Carnahan, who wrote Deepwater Horizon, World War Z, and The Kingdom. So, you know, pretty solid movies. Not the best action films, but solid action movies on the whole. The cast, Tom Cruise plays the senator. He doesn't play one of the soldiers. You know, he's old now-ish. And he's sitting behind a desk this whole movie. They don't utilize him, which is disappointing. Professor Malley is played by Robert Redford. He, you know, directed and starred in this one. His acting credits include The Natural, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, and All the President's Men. So he's a good actor. He's got a decent directing resume, too. So it could have been good. Janine Roth is played by Meryl Streep, the one, the only Meryl Streep. Devil Wears Prada, Sophie's Choice, that Meryl Streep. And, you know, it's just kind of like weird. She's fine. Like, she's Meryl Streep, so she's good. But, like, it's written so weird. And I don't know. Uncomfortable. Ernest Rodriguez, played by Michael Pena, from American Hustle, Ant-Man and Crash. Todd Hayes, who is the student, is played by Andrew Garfield. Social Network, Spider-Man, Andrew Garfield, Hacksaw Ridge, Academy Award nominated, Andrew Garfield. And it isn't good. And I'm so mad that there's so many good actors in this. And it just, it misses the mark entirely as a movie. Arian Finch is played by Derek Luke, who's in Captain America First Avenger, Glory Road, Antoine Fisher. Two other people who are like named members of the cast. Lieutenant Colonel Falco is played by Peter Berg, who is in Lone Survivor. He's also in Collateral, and he was in Chicago Hope. And then there's one person who's like a specific editor for the newspaper. It's played by Kevin Dunn, who you might know from Transformers or Veep or Godzilla. He's in one episode of Cheers. I know him most, I think, from Veep and Transformers, because he plays the Witwicky guy. He's the dad of Shia LaBeouf, I believe. Yeah, such a good cast, decent writer, director with some chops, and it really just fell short. Its budget was like $35 million, and it grossed like $63.2 million. Let's talk some fun facts. There's not really many fun facts. The tagline for this movie was, "What do you : live ... die ... fight ... stand for?" What does that mean? Means nothing. This movie has no consequences, really. I don't know if it's pro-military or anti-military, because on one hand, it's saying, like, do something with your life, enlist in the military. On the other hand, it's like, if you enlist in the military, you die. So, I don't know. It's not a hopeful film. It's not like, you know, if you fight for what you believe in, all will be well, but it's also not too cynical of a film either, because it's like, you know, you can have dreams, you can have hope if you want. So I just, it's so hard to place where this movie stands, and it's frustrating because of that. I believe the only like actual fun fact. So this movie was nominated only for 3 awards in total, despite its A-list cast, A-list director. It was nominated for only 3 awards. The first was for the International Film Music Critics Award. It was nominated for Film Music Composition of the Year. Did not win. Meryl Streep was then nominated for 2 awards for this movie. The first of which was the Alliance of Women Film Journalists Actress Defying Age and Ageism Award. Meryl Streep was nominated for that. And then it was she was also nominated for Best Actress for the AARP Movies for Grownups Award. This movie wasn't even nominated for Best Picture at the AARP Movies for Grownups Award in 2008. And I just want to take a second to talk about the 2008 AARP Movies for Grownup Awards, because most of these movies I've never heard of. So Meryl Streep was beat out by Julie Christie for a movie called Away From Her. So Meryl Streep was beat out for Best Actress. But there are best movie categories for all sorts of movies that just kind of like don't make any sense. So they have a Best Buddy Picture category where The Bucket List won. They have a Best Documentary, Best Foreign Film. They have Best Grown-Up Love Story, the winner of which in 2008 was Hairspray. I don't even know. The Best Movie for Grown-Ups, which is their overall category, was The Savages. They also have one for Best Movie for Grown-Ups Who Refuse to Grow Up, and Enchanted won. What on earth is any of this? Tom Hanks was nominated for an award. I don't even think Tom Hanks would go to the ceremony for the AARP Movies for Grown-Ups Award. What? Juno was nominated for Best Comedy. Didn't win because old people don't like Juno. What is this? Anyway, I'm on a tangent here. Lions for Lambs is bad, is what I'm trying to tell you. Lions for Lambs isn't even bad in like a cult kind of way, right? Because like Legend is bad. Tom Cruise's Legend is just terrible. But I loved it. I loved every second of it. It had, you know, a similarly stellar cast, and it's campy. It's fun. It's a little sexy. But Lions for Lambs takes an excellent cast and makes them sit in rooms and have conversations. And that's the whole movie. I generally love most Andrew Garfield movies. I really do. I loved The Amazing Spider-Man. Controversial opinion, I know, but it's still great. I don't know. I just get upset with this one. Wholeheartedly. Well, I'll give you a little bit of data breakdown. As you know, I rate every movie on enjoyment, engagement, quality, iconography, and the Tom Cruise factor. This one, you know, middle of the road enjoyment, engagement, right? At around a 10. Quality, it is well made. It's Robert Redford, phenomenal cast, one of the best casts you see in late Tom Cruise years. Not iconic at all. One of his least well-known films overall, and so not Tom Cruise-y. It's closer to the Tom Cruise you'd see in like A Few Good Men sort of situation. But even in A Few Good Men, he's like got these great monologues and he's in the courtroom and you get to see him outside of his office, you know, you get to see him in a couple different places. This one, no, you see him sitting at his desk. I think he stands for a few seconds, He's in uniform, so not super high Tom Cruise-y. It has a meta score of 49, which I know is technically higher than a lot of the ones that I've said are really bad. Like, it's higher than Austin Powers and Goldmember, for example. But it is still explicitly a Tom Cruise movie, is the problem. Because the other ones that are low, like Austin Powers and Goldmember, is not a Tom Cruise movie. It's a movie that features Tom Cruise. So I'd put it, you know, pretty on par with other ones like that. Metascore 49. So yeah, that's my whole opinion on the matter. I won't recommend this to anyone. Not a single person should watch this movie. Maybe one person should watch it so I have someone to rant to. But by golly, did I not enjoy that movie very much. So yeah, that's kind of it for the show. Next week, we're going to be talking about Tropic Thunder. We're entering a string of not very good movies. We just got out of a string of really good movies, and now we're going into Lions for Lambs, Tropic Thunder, Valkyrie, and Night and Day. Arguably his worst stretch of movies. So hold on tight, folks. We'll get into it. And as always, stay gold, Pony Boy.